Time to head to the BetQL guest hotline. BetQL analyzes every game to find you the most profitable betting opportunities, and everybody wants those. Get 3 free days of BetQL access. Just download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com. We say good morning to Ben Valin. He covers the NFL for the Boston Globe. What's up, Ben? Good morning.
Sports junkies, how are we doing today?
We're doing well. I think I'm on about 4 hours sleep because I stayed up too late watching the Bills beat the Jets, and also the refs throw so many yellow flags last night. Now, I love the NFL. I love the product. I consume it on a weekly basis, but I don't know. Can they do anything about reducing the penalties, especially the weird ticky-tack, like, formation penalties about, like, the tight end's not exactly on the line or the receiver's not cut? Like,
no, the worst is landing on the quarterback.
Well, that's clearly, yeah, that one has to go, too, but is there a practical way to reduce the penalties? Because it becomes unwatchable.
It felt like too much of a ref show last night. I think there were 30 flags when you factor in all the declined penalties.
Right.
But it's like, to me, the formation penalties are the ones that's on the team. That's on the players for not knowing the rules. Mm-hmm. And like Bill Belichick said this during the Manning cast last night, those penalties require nothing but mental awareness and knowing the rules.
Right.
Where I do think they could pull back is, as one of you just mentioned, the body weight penalty, which I give the NFL credit. I hadn't seen it as much this year. It's not like that penalty has dominated the games, been a point of emphasis like it has in the past. But even Aaron Rodgers last night criticized the refs for calling that one, and he used a South Park reference. We might as well play Sarcastaball if we're just going to call those. So it's the ticky-tack, it's the roughing the passer, it's the offensive holding penalties, defensive holding. You could call those penalties on every single play if you really wanted to. So last night was bad, but I haven't seen every game become a ref show this year. I haven't seen a lot of games being marred by flags. So I think that was just an officiating crew last night that was, got a little too big for its britches, maybe.
What's your take on the status right now of the Jets at 2-4? Obviously, Rodgers isn't playing at a real high level. He's turning the ball over. Last 2 weeks, he had the turnover where he underthrew Williams in London, lose that game to the Vikings. Then obviously last night, 2-4, man. I mean, they got to go on a little bit of a run here.
Yeah, Rodgers played better last night than he did in the past, but boy, it's a good thing the Jets fired their defensive-oriented head coach, because, man, that just fixed all of their problems.
Yeah.
The offense is what has been the Jets' issues. And even last night, they still only scored 20 points. I know they missed a couple chip-shot field goals, but 1-for-4 in the red zone, not an impressive performance by Todd Downing in his first game as offensive coordinator. And then, what do you know? The Jets' defense was awful last night. They got gashed by the Bills' run game and got consistently blown off the line of scrimmage. Jets, I still believe that with Rodgers, they can put it together. He's a guy that in the past, especially with Green Bay, would kind of struggle the first couple months of the season. He'd have to tell the fans R-E-L-A-X and that kind of thing. And then second half of the season, they'd string it together and go on a run. So I think that's still possible here for Rodgers and the Jets. They do have a lot of talent, but the organization is a mess. I don't understand how firing Robert Saleh solves anything. You've changed leadership now at a crucial point of the season. They were only 2-3. If they won last night, they'd be in first place. So there's still plenty of season left. There are a lot of guys in that locker room, like Sauce Gardner, who are really hurt by their firing. So I just, very strange move by Woody Johnson and by the real power in New York there, Aaron Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ben, I saw you tweet about Nick Sirianni, and we'll get to Washington, the NFC East here in a moment, but the Eagles just don't seem right. He's chirping at the fans, and then you tweeted that he did a Bush League move. Tell us what he did.
Yeah, I mean, I was not a fan of this, and it's not just Nick Sirianni. I hate it when the NBA players do this. He brought his kids up onto the podium after the game for his postgame.
Oh, did we lose him?
I think we might have lost time. Ben. Oh, there we go.
And I've heard from fans, he does this a lot after home wins. I don't care if he does it a lot. It's Bush League every single time he does it. And especially the other day when he's under fire now. I mean, he's acting like a maniac once again on the sidelines and going at fans. And, the guy hears everything and can't let a single slight go. And it's like, I've never seen a situation where the players have to calm the head coach down and tell him to chill out. And Nick Sirianni, that's what he's been doing over the years, and he just can't help himself. And he's clearly under fire. His offense is only averaging 17 points a game the last 4 weeks. Jalen Hurts is a mess. I think Sirianni probably should have been fired over the offseason. He was lucky to keep his job, and he's clearly feeling the heat. And to bring his kids up onto the podium to kind of, he claims it was about, instilling the love of football in your children. Like, give me a break. That is a professional time. Everyone's working. You're the leader of the organization, and you're holding your kids up on the podium to kind of act as a human shield, to shield you from hard questions. I thought it was really Bush League by Sirianni, and a really poor show of accountability and leadership from a guy who that's why you're paid the big money, to be accountable and to show leadership. So really not a fan of anyone who brings their kids up onto the podium during these press conferences.
So, Ben, sticking in the NFC East, the Cowboys just humiliated at home 47-9 in the loss to the Detroit Lions. In their three losses this year, the Cowboys have been outrushed by those three teams 648-172. They have a real problem stopping the run when teams like Baltimore and Detroit pay them a visit. I mean, is this fixable? And you talked about the heat on previous coaches. The heat's on Mike McCarthy heading into the bye week, I would think.
He couldn't be any hotter on Mike McCarthy. I would be shocked if Jerry Jones made a move during the season, though. I mean, the whole point of the season was to let Mike McCarthy go into the final year of his deal and coach it out and see how he does. So I think, absent maybe a week or two to go, I wouldn't expect Mike McCarthy to be fired. I think Jerry Jones is going to give him time to figure this out. But absolutely, first of all, there's not much shame in giving up some running yards to the Ravens and the Lions. I mean, these two are probably the two best offenses in the NFL right now. The Ravens are ridiculous, averaging like 215, 220 yards a game on the ground. And the Lions have really woken up the last 2 weeks. I think they've scored 11 touchdowns in their last two games. So, the Cowboys, there's no shame in giving up some yards and some points to those teams. But, yeah, the Cowboys have their bye week now. Mike Zimmer, their defensive coordinator, he's new this year. Only there on a one-year deal. So everyone in that organization is on the hot seat, and they've got to use this bye week wisely. They've got two tough games coming up now, at San Fran and at Atlanta, another team that's rolling with Kirk Cousins right now. And then they come home to face the Eagles and Texans. So this is a very crucial part of the schedule for Dallas. They've got to emerge. They're 3-3 now. You've got to think they've got to get to 6-4 to really feel good about their chances heading into the final stretch. But, Dak Prescott, shouldn't escape criticism either. It only scored 9 points against the Lions last week. Just a total failure by the Cowboys organization. And with the Commanders playing so well, I don't think the Cowboys can afford to get too far behind in the NFC East.
Yeah, I can't believe they went into the season thinking Zeke Elliott would be their number one RB. I mean, it's just incredible. All right, let's talk about the team that you follow closely up there in Boston. What was the fans' reaction and the local media, to Drake May, first of all, getting the start, and then how he played? I watched some of the game. I'm a Drake May fan. Clearly, the three turnovers is you're going to go, okay, well, rookie making rookie mistakes. But he had three really nice drives, and then the first touchdown pass was beautiful to Boutte. And they scored more points. He had more touchdown passes than Brissett had total. So your thoughts on the way May played and how the fans reacted?
Yeah, I think you said it. For the first, quarter and a half, it looked really dreadful. Why are the Patriots putting this kid in with this team that has no talent and they're clearly not ready for a rookie quarterback? I think they went 3-and-out, their first three drives, couldn't get anything going. Drake May sailed a throw, led to an interception, and you're heading into the half being like, oh man, this is going to be an ugly season. And then out of nowhere, boom, he leads the 2-minute drill and throws that 40-yard touchdown to Kayshon Boutte right before the half. And man, was that an eye-opening throw. That was, this is not hyperbole, that was the best throw by a Patriots quarterback in the last 5 years. They have not had a quarterback between Cam Newton, Mac Jones, and Jacoby Brissett who could step up and throw the ball on the dime and make quick strike plays like that. And then the second half, it was eye-opening. It wasn't like a string of amazing plays, but his ability to scramble and throw on the run and get receivers uncovered, He hit DeMario Douglas for a 35-yard catch and run touchdown. Just like the big play element that we haven't seen since Tom Brady left 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, the Patriots, they lost by 20 to the Texans. They had the 3 turnovers, a ton of penalties, sloppy day. And yet, if you're a fan, you came out of there feeling pretty good. Like, okay, we have a quarterback now. We've got a big physical guy who can run, has got an arm, can make some throws. He's going to take some chances down the field. And now it's all about teaching him how to play winning football and putting some pieces around him, which unfortunately for the Patriots is not going to happen overnight. They have so many needs, receiver, offensive line, that it's going to take another year or two. But you've got to be impressed with Drake May's physical talent and what he's able to bring to the position. That those are skills that, you know, Jacoby Brissett, Mac Jones, just they didn't have, and they couldn't. You can't fake some of that stuff. So Drake May, I think it was certainly an eye-opening performance in his first NFL start.
Ben, what do you make of this Belichick media foray? It's got to be interesting for you, having covered him all these years. And then, you know, I guess he took some shots at Woody Johnson, you know, this weekend. And, of course, people are now obviously connecting him to the Cowboys. Is that a situation that could that even work, Jerry and Belichick together?
I think it would work just because, if you remember, Jerry Jones hired Bill Parcells 20 mm-hmm. years ago, and that was when Bill Parcells was kind of at the height of his powers and could have as much control as he wanted. I think Belichick just wants to get back in the game badly enough that he's willing to put up with an owner who meddles a little bit more than Robert Kraft did over the years, and he's willing to not have total personnel control as long as it's someone that he works with. The media tour is interesting. It almost feels like Belichick's overexposed. He's got like 7 different media outlets that he's working with throughout the week. I can't keep up with all of them. I really just watch him on the Peyton Manning, Eli Manning broadcast on ESPN2, where his live game analysis is unbelievable. The detail that he sees in real time is just mind-blowing, and he's able to convey that information in a very digestible way. So Belichick, if he wants to do the media thing, he'd be the best game analyst ever. I can listen to him break down football all day long. But he definitely, I think he's using these media opportunities to show the owners how smart he is and how personable he can be. And hey, look at me, I'm photogenic now and I'm telegenic and I'm big, happy, fun Bill, who's your fun grandpa. So I think he really is just using this to try to get back into the game. And the team I've got my eyes on are the ones we talked about before. I'm looking at the Eagles. I think Sirianni's in real trouble there. Belichick has a very good relationship with the owner, Jeffrey Lurie, who's a Boston guy and, you know, loves all the Boston sports teams except the Patriots now. Belichick has a good relationship with Howie Roseman. I think that's a situation where they've got a lot of talent and they just need some coaching, and it's like a ready-made roster. Bill Belichick and Matt Patricia were guests of the Eagles a few weeks ago on that big primetime game. I forget who they were playing, but clearly there's a good relationship there. So I think if Belichick does get back into coaching, I've got my eyes on the Eagles next year.
Ben, what have your takeaways been from Tom Brady and his new gig as a commentator for Fox?
I haven't sat down and watched like every game that he's done because I'm at Patriots games every Sunday, but mm-hmm. I've certainly heard some of his broadcasts, and it's kind of what I expected. It's pretty blah. It's pretty boring. It's just run-of-the-mill analysis. And I certainly don't think it's worth Fox's $37.5 million a year. I think you can get better analysis for a tenth of that. And I just always felt that the broadcaster gig is a weird fit for Tom Brady because it relies on spontaneity and relatability, and those have never been Brady's strong suits. He's always been very carefully planned. His press conferences, he never said much interesting. And he, you know, it'd be great if he could sit there like Belichick and really break down the tactics and why teams are attacking certain ways. But, it's really just surface level analysis right now. So it's fine. It's not like he detracts from the broadcast, but I don't really see why, you know, despite his big name, I don't see really what he's adding to the broadcast so far.
All right, Ben, we got to run. Hey, are you heading to London to cover Jags, Pats? Are you that lucky?
Uh-huh. Yeah, this is, I am going, and this is our, revenge for the War of 1812 or whatever, giving them this terrible football game. Doug Peterson, guys, I think is lucky to have survived that loss to the Bears. If they were playing in the U.S. this week, I think Doug Peterson would be fired.
Yeah.
If they lose to the Patriots, Doug Peterson's got to be gone.
Yeah,
yeah, he's got to be gone. So the London game is famous for claiming coaches. We might get another one this week.
All right, Ben. Thanks as always, man. Always good talking to you.
All right, appreciate you guys.
All right, thank you, buddy.
Ben Valin covers the NFL for the Boston Globe. Don't forget, coming up at 8:20, Barry Zwerluga from the Washington Post will join us. We'll talk about Commanders and Major League playoffs and more with Barry. Bank local, cheer local, in business. Every day is game day. Business is always moving up or down, but never still. That's why the Main Street Bank team treats every day like game day. Main Street Bank is a business-focused community bank proudly serving the DMV since 2004. That's 20 years. Visit mstreetbank.com to learn how to put our team in your office. Main Street Bank, member FDIC, equal housing opportunity lender.